I don't think I'll sing a song. I'll just talk real fast for the first part of my lesson to calm down. It is so nice to be here. It doesn't seem right being a guest here, though, and not knowing what's going on and everything, but that's okay. It's good to be back here. And when I was starting this lesson and I was thinking of joy and the joy we get from obedience, it's so easy to focus on the joy part. But what I realized is we don't have to focus on that because it will just be there. It's not something we can create inside of ourselves. It's kind of like saying we create the satisfaction of being full. When what we do is we feed our bellies and then the satisfaction is just there. We can't create that in us. And that's kind of how it is with the obedience part of with joy is we don't create the joy part, we obey and it's just there. And so that's really what we're going to focus this lesson on is obeying God, trusting God and fearing Him. And then the end result is joy and it's just there. And I think I'll be able to do this lesson a little bit better if people in the audience aren't like doing things like knitting and I know. But I'm just joking with the aunt. So our obedience starts with what? Our mind. It starts with our attitude. And we can go one of two ways. We can respond to commands that we're supposed to do or people telling us what to do with either frustration and reasoning, or we can respond with joy and eagerness. And in the Bible, the first person we see responding with reasoning is Eve. She was told to do something, and she reasoned it through in her head. And another person is Naaman. Remember when Naaman had leprosy, and he went to Elisha and said, you know, what should I do? And Elisha said, go dip in the Jordan 7 times. And he reasoned. He said in 2 Kings 5:10, Elisha sent a messenger, said, go dip in 7 times. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Because Naaman had in his mind that there was a better way to do it. So instead of just simply obeying, he thought through with his own mind. Same with Jonah. In Jonah 1, it says, but Jonah ran away from the Lord. And then in Jonah 3, it says, Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord. So in these examples, we see that even though some of them responded with frustration and reasoning and ended up obeying, like Naaman eventually went ahead and did what he was told, and so did Jonah. Whereas Eve, she kind of had one chance, and that was it. So it's kind of interesting seeing that our initial response is very critical to it, because sometimes we have other chances and sometimes we don't. Now compare that to the people who responded with joy and eagerness and just said, yes, sir, okay, God, I'll do it. Think of Noah. Of anybody who could have reasoned with God, he would have been one who could have come up with a lot of reasons of why he shouldn't be doing this. But he didn't. He just went about his work happily. And same with the jailer when he asked what he could do to be saved. And he was told, you know, believe in God and be baptized. He just went and did it, and he went away rejoicing. Same with Abraham. I always think of Abraham, of all the people who could have reasoned with God and said, why? This can't be your will. This isn't right. But he didn't. He went ahead and took his son up there and without questioning. And so now I kind of want us to bring that back to us. How do we respond? And so right now I want all of you guys to stand up. Okay, now go ahead and sit back down. Now, I want you to think about your first initial gut reaction of when I told you to stand up. And don't twist it or think, oh, yeah, I thought it was going to be good or something. Like, mine is usually like, oh, brother, wait, they always have us do this, you know. Yeah, it's like, I want you to honestly take a look at yourself and see what that gut was. Was it like, oh, man, I'm going to sit all my stuff down, or was it, oh, good, I get to stretch, or whatever it was. There was probably some little thing in there, and I want you to think about that, and We're going to come back to that in this lesson. Because how we react to commands begins with our attitude. That kind of was what Aspen was talking about, too. Let's see. Okay, now I want to use another example. What if I, instead of telling you to stand up, I told you to walk to the end of the road? Or what if we had done this lesson last night and it was snowing and 20 degrees and I'd said, go ahead and go walk to the end of the road? Would have you guys done what I said? What would have you, Chloe would have been saying, I can't get my walker through that snow. And I mean, there would have been complaints, there would have been excuses, reasons, complaints, everything. Now take it to, what if a fireman was standing here and there was fire trucks out there and the fireman said, ladies, you've got to walk to the end of the road. Would you walk to the end of the road? You probably would have done it, right? And that goes back to a basic premise, and this is kind of one of the bigger things of this lesson, is you'll obey who you trust or what you trust. And that we had this preacher who came and did a gospel meeting, and he was from the Memphis School of Preaching. And he said he's been a gospel preacher for 28 years, but before that he was an electrician. And he had worked on this piece of machinery so long, he knew it in and out. And so when it broke, he knew exactly what piece it was. So he went and told his boss, and he said, you know, this is the piece that we need to fix. And his boss said, we can't fix that. That's a $3,000 piece. So his boss went ahead troubleshooting, figuring out, because he didn't trust just this electrician. He wasn't he didn't really know the machine. So his boss spent, you know, a week, I think, or more trying to figure out this. He replaced other parts. And then he finally brought in an engineer who, you know, was going to figure it out. And that engineer said, oh, it's that piece right there, that $3,000 piece. And to put it in perspective, this guy said, you know, every minute that machine was down, it was costing his boss $3,000. And it ended up costing him hundreds of thousands of dollars because he didn't listen to this one person because he didn't trust him. He didn't trust him. And I thought, that's how it is with us. If we do not trust in God, it's going to cost us because we are going to take our gut reactions and our reasoning and our whatever, and we're going to follow that. And it might cost us a little or it might cost us a lot. But God says, if you trust me, it says in Romans 15:13, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Trusting also allows us to submit our will. If we trust fully in something, it's easier for us to say, okay, put my will aside. I don't understand this any more than maybe you would understand why the fireman was telling you to go, but you trust. And so it's easier then to put our will behind us and look to God. And which brings me to my next point is that in Galatians 2:20, it says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And I go back to that verse so often and think, if I have been crucified, I no longer live. I think, well, how come my desires are living? You know, if I have truly, truly given myself to God, I shouldn't have these desires. And I shouldn't be following my will, what Tanya wants. And I think, why is that? Why does that always creep up? Why does it always come back? And it's because Satan. Satan is there, always. And he's there wanting to steal our joy. That's his whole purpose in life. And he works at it with all his heart to steal our joy. And so we need to be focusing on, you know, how we react to things, but we also need to know how Satan works and know what we're up against. And it reminded me of one day we were out camping and we had these trees were cut, so we had a beautiful picture of Denali and Foraker, and it was like a day like this. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. You would think it was the most beautiful day, but right on top of Denali was a little cloud. I mean, It was tiny. And Jed said, that's a lenticular cloud. He said, you, if you're flying, you need to really be aware of those because they're dangerous. And they'll, you know, you can't be flying there. You'll go down. And I remember thinking, a silly little cloud, you know. It's if you wouldn't heed the warning of that cloud and instead you would look perfect. Thank God. And you would look at everything else and you'd say, but look at this. That little thing can't hurt me. And it hit me that that's how Satan works in our lives. We can look at 99% of our lives and say, this is great. This is perfect. There is no way that thing can touch me. You know, and if pilots wouldn't heed the warning of that little cloud and know what was happening with it, they would probably be dead, or, you know, they would get hurt. And that's the same it is with us. If we will not heed the warnings that God has given us, that Satan is prowling around like a lion. He's waiting. He's just waiting to get us. And if we don't heed that warning and instead we look at all the beautiful things around us, then we're going to be in trouble too. So it makes me think we've got to know how Satan works. Now, this is kind of the part of my lesson that's kind of it for my lesson, and this is how I think Satan works in our lives, and we're going to go back to how your reactions are. This summer, my sister told me, she said, I've been to a peacemaker, peacemakers.com, and she said that how it's on that website, it talks about how we react to things is our idol, and it hit me like, oh, that's not true, Renee. That's just my reaction. That's just how I, you know, my circumstances or whatever. And she said, read that. Go to the website and read it. And it talks about that whatever we choose over obedience to God is what is most important to us. It's what makes us feel secure. It makes it makes us to be happy and fulfilled. And I like the thing of security. If we always respond in some way and that's our security, that's your idol. And when you put that word idol to it, it no longer becomes just an excuse or a way you react. It becomes disobedience straight in God's face. That's your idol. And that really hit me so hard in that we have to change that before we can obey God. Because if our reactions are not obeying God, then we choose to serve God. And here's a verse that really, really hit home to me. It says, 2 Kings 17:41. Even while these people were worshiping the Lord, they were serving their idols. To this day, their children and grandchildren continue to do as their fathers did. And that hits me so hard, is that the reason we don't react in a negative way is because it's going to affect everyone around you. You're serving your idol. And that hit me like, I think that hit so hard because, you know, my sister's going through a hard time this summer. And it's so easy. I was catching myself so much reacting like, that's not fair. He can't do that. This isn't right. And you turn that over and you look at what does God say to do. And that's not what God says to do. So right in there, I was making a conscious choice to serve myself and these ways I react rather than serving God. And then that's why there's no joy there. That's where there's no joy in serving your idols. And I think our kids are going to pick up the way we react to things. And the reason I wanted you to think about how you reacted when you stood up is probably generally on a kind of a general scale, that's how you're going to react to most things in life. And I know some people might say, oh, Tanya, how I react to you asking me to stand up isn't how I react to my husband or my boss. And at some level, I think it is, because we're pretty habitual creatures. And we pretty much know we don't really change seasons and here and there. So if we can get ourselves to react in every situation, like I think when they mess your latte up, and, you know, do you say, oh, brother? Or do you say, that's fine, you know, and go on with it. Think, get down to the littlest details and think, what am I serving every time I'm told to do something? And then it'll grow from there. And then eventually we can be getting to the point where we're doing what God says to do rather than what we choose to do. And now I should have had these here, but I wasn't thinking. So So this is our discussion group. Here, can you pass these out? And I want you to look at these to start rewriting these down as we talk. So I want to compare what our idols are. And I want to keep using that word, because if we just use the word how we react to something, or some people say, well, that's just who I am. If we use it in those words, we don't really see that it's a stark contrast to what God says to do. And I'm going to start reading some of God's commands. And I want us to think about who, as I read these commands, I'm going to kind of give some of the responses I've had or heard or I've seen in people's lives or, you know, whatever go on. And I want you to see, are these your idols? Is this how you will typically respond to things? And then we're going to take that and contrast that with, what does God say to do? You can barely open the Bible without seeing a command. I mean, there are just so many commands that God teaches us in his lessons. But what I've picked out are some of the, like, heart commands. Because it's so easy to go to church, and it's so easy to do ladies' retreat and do these things. But it's a little bit harder to get our hearts right. And so I'm going to start there. First Peter, I'm not going to read the whole verse. I'm just going to pick things out. First Peter 5 says, all of you, clothe yourselves with humility, because God opposes the proud. Humble yourselves before the Lord. Cast all your anxiety on him. Be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. I want to go to that one. Cast all your anxiety on him. How many of us have an excuse for that, to not do that? How many of us have a reason why we have to stay anxious? And if you don't, write it down that you can completely do that. And instead of choosing your way, you can choose what God says here. Luke 12, it says, but seek his kingdom and all these things will be given to you as well. It says the same thing in Matthew 6:33. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. That same gospel preacher that was doing that gospel lesson, he said, after 28 years of gospel preaching, and he's a member of the Memphis School of Preaching, he's like the board of admissions or something, and he said, the absolute most disobeyed verse that I think Christians disobey is that verse. Seek first his kingdom. And that kind of hit me, that is a command. This isn't something that maybe we should do. How many of us find an excuse or reason or rely on our own selves rather than choosing to obey God in that? Do we seek him first, or do we seek, or do we make an excuse of, yeah, I'll do that, but I've got to get my job going first, or I've got to get this straightened out, and then I can do these things. These have kind of hit me hard, that if I don't truly obey these commands, I'm choosing to obey my idol of what I want to do. Here's another one. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. In 1 John 2, it says, anyone who claims to be in the light but hates his brother is still in the darkness. I mean, how many of us say, well, okay, but that doesn't include my mother-in-law, or that doesn't include my neighbor down the street. You don't know what they're like. These are all our reasoning. This is exactly what Naaman did. He reasoned. He thought of why it can't work. Surely God wouldn't put this person in my life if I was supposed to, you know, I can't do it with this person. It says in Romans 12, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Hate it. Be devoted to one another. Honor one another. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Bless those who persecute you. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud. Do not repay evil for evil. Do not take revenge. Do not overcome evil by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's in Romans 12:9. I think that was one that hit me so hard this summer. It's like, are you supposed to do that when the person is really being mean? You know, sometimes it's easy to love your enemy that's maybe, you know, in a war that's halfway across the world. When this enemy is hurting you and your family and your life, it's God says to do this and not to have the selfish motives or to respond in your way. in Romans 15, each of us should please his neighbor. In 1 John 2, do not love the world or anything in the world. I think that's a hard one. These are commands that God has given us to do. And if we have any excuse, that's what's more important to us than serving God. Okay, so I've gone through a lot of these. I think you can know these. Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. The reason I've gone through all of these, because I think these are all ones that we are so easily turn, we reason with. We reason that trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. We think, okay, but I need to think this through. I need to work this out. And we really have a hard time giving up these or truly obeying these commands. But what I want us to get to is that we can never get the joy that God wants us to have until we can obey these commands. And we can never obey these commands until we can get rid of ourselves and die to ourselves and just choose to obey God. And so that's why I bring them up, and I really want us to think about how I can change my attitude so that I can get to the point where I can obey God so I can receive his joy. When Carol gave me the lesson that I'd be doing, I'm like, Carol, I can't do that. I am not joyful right now. I am not. And I think God said, I know why. You know, you're on your own path. You're responding this way. You will never have that joy until you obey these commands. And you can't just obey one command. You've got to obey every command. I mean, I'm not saying you have to obey every command until you can be with God, but I'm saying you will feel the fullness of his joy the more we obey. So then I think, okay, that's good. Well, how do we do it? You know, sometimes it's like saying, okay, we'll feel joy when you get to the top of Denali and you're standing on it. It's like, okay, good. What do I do? You know, you can't just walk out of here and keep doing the same things you're doing and expect to receive that joy. So we have to change. Let's see. We have to have that passion to change. You have to have a desire to want to change. When I was a young girl, we had our bathroom, and then you walked out of the bathroom, and there's a full-length mirror. Every morning, no matter, all day long, you walked out and you saw yourself. And when I was young, I'd look in that mirror and look around and turn around and make sure everything was just so perfect. And I don't do that anymore. I barely see a mirror. And sometimes, like, I have a mirror that just, I see this part, and I do whatever I do. And I'm thinking, okay, I look kind of nice and put some pants on and go out. And then I'll see my reflection in something, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, that is hideous. And I'm like, Tanya, one time when I was pregnant, I had my pregnant pants, and I just had a little shirt, so it came to here, so I had that pregnant band, like, all the way down to here. And I was like, I said, Judd, does this look okay? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's fine. It wasn't a very good mirror. I got to work. I was going to work. And with I was like, oh my goodness, this I can't believe this. But and I think now that's how sometimes I wonder if we become in our Christian lives, that we no longer examine ourselves so much and we don't see how we've become just so twisted or how things don't fit or how they aren't. And what I'm encouraging you is that you will never know what you look like until you look at a picture of yourself, until you look in a mirror and or get three mirrors all around you and you see the whole thing. You will not know what you look like spiritually. So I mean, you have to have that desire to look at yourself honestly and to really see, okay, where have I let myself go spiritually? Where do I need to change? And I also want to say that it's hard to change. You know, I've heard that if you have a habit, it takes 20 days to change it. And I agree. Like, try sitting through the rest of this class without crossing your legs or your hands or your feet. It's hard. I've tried that before, and 1 minute later, I'll be crossing my leg again, you know? And it's just that it's what we go back to. And it's the same spiritually. I don't think we change mentally any more than we do physically. It's the same thing. So I just want to say, keep doing it, you know, even though you fall back into a pattern, keep doing it and have that desire that you will change. And you know, if we don't change, if we just hear these lessons over and over, and we go to church and we listen, but we don't change, or we're not willing to examine ourselves and see where we need to change, we're just like the people they talk about in 2 Timothy 3:7. It says, always learning, but never able to acknowledge the truth. And I think, ouch, that's hard. You know, it's like looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I don't need to change anything. I'm just fine. And it's like you're slouched over and you're this. And it's like, it's not okay. You do need to change. So first, we need to want to change, and realizing we'll have to keep doing it over and over. And also on this Peacemaker website, I think it's peacemakers.com, if you guys want to go there. You know, she points out that we've got the Bible, the Spirit, and the Church. And in Hebrews 4:12, it says, the Bible is living and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart. If you want to change, if you have a passion to change and a desire to serve God, God says the Bible is there. It will show you. And he's also given us his Spirit, that the Spirit will convict us of our sins. If we are studying the Bible daily and we are searching it out and we're praying to God, God says, I'm here to help you. It's not just something to read good stories about. It will change your life. And the third thing is church. We need our friends. We need each other. We need each other encouraging us. We need each other helping us along and saying, she wrote it real good here, even to lovingly confront us about our idols and help us in our spiritual growth. That's why we need to be at the Bible studies, at the fellowships, at the whatever's, knowing what's going on in people's lives. You know, if you don't know what's going on, you can't help them. And the third thing, or whatever, what point I'm on is, don't listen to others. Do not listen to people in the church. People have good ideas, and they might have great intentions, but they could be dead wrong. And Job was wrong. Job's wife was wrong. You know, when he was sitting there hurting, scraping his boils, his wife said to him, are you still holding on to your integrity? Why don't you just curse God and die? And he called her a foolish woman. He said, you're talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept the good from God and not the bad? So she was wrong. Of all the people that should have been there encouraging him, she wasn't. And he was smart to not listen to her and to focus on God. I think, go back to these verses, pick out the verses that are hard, the heart verses, and say, is this what God wants? Is this trusting in the Lord? Is this leaning not on my own understanding? Is this, and if it isn't, then change your attitude. Also, it says in 1 John 3, dear children, do not let anyone lead you astray. Ephesians 4:14 says, then we will no longer be infants, tossed back and forth by the waves, blown here and there by every wind of teaching. Don't do that. Don't listen to those other teachings, those other ideas, people saying things. And then it comes down to we choose to trust. And sometimes at the end of this, I keep thinking there's going to be just some magical thing that's going to help us choose to trust, and there isn't. There's nothing that can bolster us up to help us trust. We just have to take that step sometimes and say, I will not respond this way when my husband tells me to do something. I'm going to just simply trust in God and choose this way. And it comes down to a matter of just doing it. Like when the alarm goes off at 5 and you've said, I am gonna start exercising, nothing is gonna get you out of bed except for that choice. You just make a choice. We make a choice to fear God. It says, do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. That's in Matthew 10. And in Psalms 130, if you, O Lord, kept a record of sins, O Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness. Therefore, you are feared. We can't. God isn't going to put this trust and obedience and fear in us. We just have to choose it. We have to choose to love God. We've got to choose to seek Him, seek out what He wants. When we want to act a certain way, seek how God wants us to act. We just have to trust in Him. It comes down to just trusting Him and choosing to trust Him. It was easier for you guys to maybe trust a fireman. But if you really wanted to trust me, it would just be a choice. If you to just say, okay, I trust her, and I'm going to go. For no reason, nothing that I've done. It's just something in you that has said, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to obey Him and delight in Him. And this one, I think, is a little bit more tangible thing. You can put on music. You can put scriptures around your house and focus on delighting in Him to help you keep that focus. Now, there was a verse, and I've kind of lost it in here, but it's the one that says, here it is, 2 Corinthians 5:7, we live by faith, not by sight. And I think that's kind of where it comes down to, is that we, it's faith that we go on if we're going to obey Him. And then once we obey Him, we get that joy. So in our discussion groups, I liked what Lori did about if we walk away from here and we don't have a specific plan or we haven't said what we're going to do differently, it's just talk and it's just listening. But we have to change something so we can grow, so we can have the obedience. And that's kind of what I want you to do with these. Some of these are hard. If you're really, oh, wait, I forgot. Come up. I was going to do a little skit thing. Come here, my skit people. I forgot. I think guys will kind of get the point, but this is another thing. Satan is waiting. You know, we're a bunch of ladies here, like, I always picture us, you know, just standing around, and sometimes we think we're doing so good spiritually, but this is how we kind of are really doing spiritually. You know, we're not standing all straight and perfect, and Satan is walking around. He is just waiting. He's just waiting to just do this to one of us, and then... Thank you, ladies. Lori, still, come here. And I think you guys get the point, is that he has to topple one of us in here. And then he split your family. Then he split the church. And not only does he have to do that, he has to take one person who has a line of them behind him, somebody who has influence or somebody who has... he knows he can get through somebody. And if we think we're standing strong, but we've got one thing out here, he's going to do that. He's going to pull it from you. And one day, your family is going to be torn apart. Your kids are going to be torn apart. He'll split the church. And that's what I want to say. It's not about you. It's about all your friends around you, the people you influence, everybody. And so if we'll take an honest look at ourselves, okay, get back in your position, and instead of just saying, I look fine, because if you look at your head in the mirror, you are just fine. But if you look and say, wait, I didn't realize I was doing that, so you put your foot down. And she's like, thinks she's standing just fine, and she's all perfect in Christ. And she's like, I'm not. I've got to get this. And she's slouching like, oh, I don't care. I don't have to go to church. Nothing matters. Well, she's not strong, so she stands up, and we pull together, and we're looking around, and we're saying, who's there? You know, who's out there that Satan's going to get? And you pull together. Satan can't hurt you as bad. You know, you stand strong, and I keep thinking, ladies, and I keep thinking that's how we are. If we will take a look in the mirror and see where we're really screwed up, that we can be joyous standing as ourselves, with our family, with our church, and not let Satan come and get us. Thank you, ladies. So with the discussion things, you know, if you can, some of them are hard to do. Like, I know when I think of how I react, I'm thinking, oh, I don't want anybody to know how I, you know, it's sometimes personal, but talk about it and talk about if it doesn't match God's, what does God say to react? I don't even know if we're doing discussion groups. If not, take it home and do it. It's kind of a heart that, you know, a thing. Anyway.